Welcome to a very special edition of Life Dunk. And we have in the studio today, as well as Rabbi Miriam Berger, we have a sleep consultant, the founder of Sleepworks, Marianne Taylor. So we're going to find out how to get a good night's sleep. And I think we're going to pitch right in to start with, because I think we're going to, quite surprised us, we're going to start with the morning. Is that right, Marianne?
That's right. Thank you for having me. I'm really, really delighted to be here. After a semi-decent night's sleep, not a perfect night's sleep, but a semi-decent. Yes, I think morning is definitely a good place to start. In terms of, you know, it's interesting because everyone talks about how to get a good night's sleep and that starting in the evening and starting when we get into bed. But actually, a good night's sleep actually starts from when we wake up in the morning. And the how we start our day, the steps we go through in our day, our habits, our behaviours, our mindset, all of those things contribute to how we sleep at night, contrary to what we might assume. So yes, morning. I would say I'm going to go right on in there and say the first thing that we need to look at is light, is access to light and what happens in the morning when we... First of all, we open our eyes and we want to really try and almost kickstart our day a little bit. So we have a lot of hormones going around in terms of our sleep hormone, melatonin, which is the hormone that helps us fall asleep and stay asleep. And also is the possible contributing factor to when we feel groggy in the morning, we still have melatonin floating around in our system. So if we have access to light, and it doesn't mean you have to go out and have an hour's run outside, but opening the curtains, even stepping outside if you can for 5-10 minutes, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to be blazing sunshine as well. It can be a cloudy day, but access to natural light helps stop the production of melatonin. That's the hormone that makes us feel more groggy when we wake up in the morning, but also kickstarts our cortisol, our hormone that it's almost like a get up and go hormone. So all those things really help just how we start our day.
Lovely. So Miriam, yes.
Well, I love it when we think of these kind of newfangled sort of techniques and that we talk about the world as if their new discoveries. Whereas actually, you know, I was thinking as you were talking about kind of when does the day start with that light idea of being, you know, we're told when do we recite the morning Shema? And we're told that it's just as, you know, from the time that the sun is rising enough to be able to distinguish between the techelet, the blue thread in our tzitzit, and the white threads. It's that sense that actually there is a rhythm to our day, right? That as the sun is rising, we should be rising. But it's really hard to do in the modern world, and particularly in this part of the world where actually some times in the year we wake up in pitch darkness and it's so miserable to wake up and open the curtains and it's still dark. And other times where if you were getting up with the sun, you'd have hardly gone to sleep because the sun doesn't seem to go down or, you know, has hardly any proper full darkness at the moment. But the rabbis were really trying to schedule our day by the natural light because that's all we had. And I think our bodies are just much more attuned to the natural light than we allow them to be by thinking we have to go to bed at a certain time, but actually staying up later and later and then waking up, us wanting to wake up later and later too.
And as well as Shema in the morning, what were the other things the rabbis told us to do?
Well, I mean, look, the rabbis appreciate the morning because they were terrified of sleep. And they knew that sleep was the absolute kind of anxiety time because for them, sleep was a 60th of death. They just didn't understand sleep. And they knew that some people didn't wake up from sleep and that was death. So for them, every morning was an absolute time for gratitude, a real time to be able to say, wow, I can't take this day for granted. I've woken up. And for me, a piece that I'm sure I've said on this podcast before, but on others too, the recitation of Modeh Ani, the words that really take us from lying down to sitting up to standing up, and that idea that actually easing yourself into the day, not with a kind of what have I missed while I've been asleep, and who should I be anxious about, but rather that sense of going into the day filled with gratitude and a sort of awareness of our body. The morning blessings are really about a check-in with each part of ourselves and seeing that we're in working order that morning.
And so we thank God, not just, so we thank God for our physical, but also for the fact that we're still alive, that we've got our soul back. Is that right?
Absolutely. And that those two things are really a sense of being whole again in the morning, that we have been saved from death, that we've been reunited body and soul for another day, and only ever for another day, because every night is the potential. But there's something very deeply satisfying about allowing yourself to see each day as a gift rather than as a burden, but also that sense of I'm here and I'm in working order, and that kind of very physical check-in with each part of ourselves.
And is that how it works for you, Marianne? The idea of there's a physical bit and there's a and then the sort of slightly more spiritual, or the other bit, the soul bit that's returned to us.
I mean, exactly that. It's really, really interesting. And yeah, I'll just pull up something specific you said about the rabbis fearing death. Sorry, not fearing death, fearing sleep. And you know, I find that a lot with the work that I do, is that there's a bit of a fear around, what if I don't sleep well? What if I wake up and I can't manage my day? I've got to do this. I've got to get up and go to this meeting, or I've got to catch a flight, or whatever it is. And there's a fear in sleep. So it might be slightly different reasoning behind the fear in sleep, but there is definitely this fear of, you know, I'm not going to manage. I'm not going to cope with my day. How am I going to manage my day? So that's one thing. But also in terms of starting your day, and I would say so many of us, that what we have gotten into is these terrible habits of, what do we do? The first thing when we wake up is we reach for our phone and we just check what is going on out there. What's happening? News, messages, all of that. And we overstimulate our brain from the first second we open our eyes. We have no time to kind of just give our brain that sort of ease in, as you mentioned before. It's that sort of time to just regroup a little bit. So there is definitely the physicality of it, but there is definitely that sort of that mental stress that we just almost flick a button and say, right, on, from the second we open our eyes. And that is just not ideal. That is not a great way to start.
So you're going and opening the curtains, and if possible standing outside, that's pre-phone. That's, you want to do that, that's if you can, is that right?
Oh, please. I mean, I know it's not an easy one, because we are, let's face it, realistically, we are kind of addicted to our phones, and we have this kind of almost on mentality, constantly on. We need to know what's happening out there. But you would be amazed at the difference it can make, just to have that moment, allow some thoughts to come and go. And this is another thing, talking about fear as well, is sometimes we're a bit nervous to allow those thoughts to happen, that we feel that we just have to kind of sort of put a hand up and say, no, I can't allow those thoughts. But with that comes all sorts of issues, in that you're pushing these thoughts away. They're all going to come and go. And there is an element of allowing them to happen. And if you can have that as the start of your day, almost, it almost relieves a little bit of that mental stress and tension that we tend to build from when we wake up in the morning. So just giving yourself that time initially at the start of the day can be really helpful in just sort of dimming down that buildup of tension that we're creating from the second we open our eyes.
Okay, so we've got morning. Any other tips for the morning from either of you before we get on later in the day? What do you think?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about breakfast. You know, there's obviously fads with intermittent fasting and pushing breakfast later. And there are arguments for that. I'm not going to sort of say, no, you mustn't do that absolutely and utterly. But certainly for people that do find it hard to get into their day, almost, they feel groggy, they feel lethargic, and it's hard for them to get into their day. Part of what might be happening is around their blood sugar level. And this is something I talk about quite a lot. So what happens over the course of the night is that our blood sugar levels drop significantly through the course of the night. And then, and the clue is in the name, breaking our fast, what we want to do is give our blood sugar levels that initial boost at the start of the day. And then throughout the day, we maintain those blood sugar levels by having regular meals or snacks in between if we need that. And that maintains our blood sugar levels. What happens if we don't have anything to eat and maybe even throw in some caffeine without any food is that our blood sugar levels are a bit haywire and they don't know what's going on. And what we try to then do is we try to then play catch up with the blood sugar levels for the whole rest of the day. So we're not able to, we don't give our blood sugar levels that initial boost at the start of the day. So all that's happening is we're trying to catch up. And that really adds to that feeling of lethargy and grogginess and lack of focus because we're just trying to catch up. So incorporate, and when I talk about breakfast, I'm not saying that we have to have a huge, big continental breakfast every morning, but something to boost your blood sugar level can be actually quite game changing.
You won't be surprised that the rabbis were very much debating this conversation as well as to what happens first, breakfast or shacharit, like breakfast or your morning prayers. And the Talmud kind of comes down on the idea that it's sort of your own haughtiness. It would be arrogant to tend to your own needs before prayer. And so it comes down on the, you should daven shacharit, you should do your morning prayers before you have breakfast. But interesting, it's Maimonides, who also is, you know, doctor and rabbi and great thinker, who says, actually, you might not be able to concentrate so well on your prayers if you haven't had breakfast, and starts to open up that kind of question of, it's not right for everybody to daven before they have breakfast. And, you know, I'm not always the greatest advocate for Haredi Judaism, but on this one, they've totally got me because they actually, the Rebbe says, actually, we need to have eaten and had something to drink before we pray because a hungry person's prayers will not be as good and as fulsome as somebody who isn't thinking about their own needs because they've taken care of them. So, it's the moment where Rabbi Menachem Mendel gets me on this debate because he says, you should not be without food. Better to eat for the sake of praying than to pray for the sake of eating. And that sense of actually whatever it is we're trying to achieve in a morning, we'll do it better if we've eaten, and the faddy diets where we all try and put off eating for as long as possible, perhaps is not actually the thing that leads to a good day, let alone a good night's sleep.
I'm with the rabbis on this.
You're with the rabbis. Okay, yeah. Good. So we've had breakfast. We've been outside. What next should we do in our day?
What next should we do? So what tends to happen, going back to the always on and we're always busy and we keep ourselves busy, whether that's through activity or mental stimulation, and we're just going, right? We're just going and going and going. And what tends to happen then is that we then get into bed after the constant overstimulation of our day and then assume we're just going to be able to fall right asleep. What we want to do is to be able to just take the levels down a little bit at various points during the day. So we don't have to, I don't need to talk about what you do to keep stimulated during the day. Everyone kind of knows that bit. It's the actually step back a little bit from your day and going back to what I mentioned before about relieving that buildup of mental stress and mental tension that we're creating, which obviously is going to then impact on when we get into bed because we're at a peak of that mental stress. So what we want to do is try and actually factor into our day that ability to be able to just take those levels down a little bit. So that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, going to the spa every afternoon. I mean, that would be lovely, but that's not necessarily going to be a realistic prospect. But taking a pause, right? I call it a pause, a daily pause in your day. And whenever I mention this, people kind of, the slight panic of, what do you mean? What do you mean a pause? What do I do? What do I do in the pause? I'm like, well, a pause doesn't, you don't need to fill the pause, right? It can be whatever you find relaxing, even sitting, staring out of a window, reading a book, listening to a podcast, listening to some music. It doesn't have to involve that kind of overstimulation, that panic of I don't know what to do in the pause. But allowing yourself that time, 10, 15 minutes, and everybody, I really don't believe that there's anybody that can't say that they can take that time out of their day to just step back a little bit, step outside, don't be scrolling on your phone for this. And I know that some people, especially teenagers, will say, well, I find it relaxing to kind of scroll through Instagram. But that's not the type of relaxation and pause I'm talking about. I'm really stepping back a little bit and going back to what I mentioned before, allowing stuff to come, allowing worries to come, allowing the thoughts to come in this pause. And again, it sounds like a very simple kind of strategy, but hugely impactful, because then what happens is that by the time you get to bedtime, you've already done a little bit of that kind of relieving the mental pressure. You're not saving it all for bedtime. And with that brings that sort of a different element of being able to feel more relaxed at bedtime. So that daily pause can be really, really impactful.
Miriam, does that sound like so Jewish? Does that sound like mincha to you?
I mean, it's definitely mincha. And actually, you know, I'm kind of sad that mincha, because it's this short pause, it's the shorter service of the three that we're gifted in our day. And because it's this shorter version, in modern practices, a lot of people shmush mincha and mariv, the afternoon and evening services, together and just, you know, back to back them at the point where the transition is from the latest for one and the earliest for the other. And I really think we miss the real essence of there being these three distinct pauses with three distinct kind of reasons in our day. One, to start the day with the right intentions. One, to gift us Jewishly that pause, a time to be able to think and to process your day and how it's going and everything that's going on for you, rather than just being constantly receiving information all the time, but rather a chance to process some of that information that's been received. And that's different again to the reasons that we have Maariv and evening service. So whether you actually take the liturgy of Mincha or just the idea that you get that little break in the middle of the day to even just look at the world around you and say, this is quite miraculous, and maybe some of the things I think are so important are maybe not quite as important as they might feel when we see them in the context of the world, is a gift.
Yeah, we talked before about that it's much easier to do things when they're Jewishly mandated, haven't we? It's much easier, right, like not to eat on Yom Kippur or not to eat cakes during Pesach, even when, but when, if you go on a diet, it becomes really hard. And it does make me think about that the mincha that Rambam's doing are just kind of going, if they just listen to Marianne, they won't do it. They know they should take the pause, so we're going to mandate it, and then they will, right, do it. Yeah, so we're back, we're moving people.
Absolutely.
So we've had mincha, and then what's the next bit of the day then?
I have to mention caffeine. We can't chat about sleep without mentioning caffeine, so I'm going to just drop it on in there. In terms of caffeine, people know about caffeine and you know about caffeine. Some people, the annoying people, say, oh yes, I can have a double espresso just before bed and that doesn't impact on me at all. And that's fine and great and marvelous for you. But for a lot of people, that isn't the case. And what I just want to flag up in particular is how long caffeine actually stays in our system, which is longer than we think. It's got a half-life of up to 6 hours. So that means that any caffeine that we take in, potentially half of it is still whirling around in our system 6 hours later. So the reason I mention this is that we have a natural dip in focus and in energy in mid-afternoon, maybe say 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's then that often people just say, oh God, I need to carry on for a few hours. I just need to keep going. So what happens is we reach for maybe the coffee, the tea, fizzy drinks, whatever it is. Now, I'm not judging in any shape or form. However, if you are struggling to get to sleep, then that 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock caffeine might be a contributing factor. So I think it's really important. Also, when I talk about caffeine, I'm not just talking about coffee. So there's a lot of caffeine in tea, in green tea, surprisingly. We just assume green tea is really lovely and healthy, but actually regular green tea has very high caffeine content. Fizzy drinks, chocolate, over-the-counter medication also. Some over-the-counter medication has caffeine as well. So it's just, I want to flag that up as just a factor.
Yeah, so eating chocolate before bed is not a good idea.
Well, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's if it's obviously caffeine content, it's not necessarily ideal for some.
Okay, so let's go to some bedtime rituals that help, unless there's anything else through the day, and then I want to talk a little bit about the night itself. So bedtime rituals from both of you. Do you want to kick us off and then we'll go to the Jewish bit again?
Fine. So, like we talked about at the beginning of our day and easing into our day and really trying to just take stock a little bit before we just hit the on button, it is the same at the end of the day. We want to ease into our bed, into our night as well, rather than jumping into our night. And we talk about this, if we think about, we talk about bedtime for children and the importance of a bedtime routine and predictable and soothing and calming and all of that. But actually, we as adults, we either don't allow ourselves that time to do that, we don't give ourselves permission to do it, or we don't think it's important for us to do it. And actually, that is absolutely not the case. We need those cues. Our brain needs those cues. We need that downtime. Our body also needs that time to just ease into our night. So having that bedtime routine, and when I say bedtime routine, people often chuckle and go, oh gosh, it sounds like such a kid thing. Is that my own bedtime routine? But that is the case. And it is really important that we have that sort of downtime without the screens, without the kind of that hyper alert mentality as well. Again, going back to the light situation, having dim light to help the production of melatonin, our sleep hormone, try to avoid all the kind of sort of the basic activity, busy activity of the day, and move away from that.
Miriam?
Well, I mean, the rabbis got it. They knew. They mandated an evening, right? So we have our Maariv, we have our evening service. And actually, the liturgy that's in the evening service that's different to the morning service really does unpack some of the anxieties that the rabbis acknowledged were part of that time of day. So if we think of, say, a piece of liturgy like Hashkivenu, which only is at night, really thinks of the things, whether it's our enemies, whether it's the natural world that forms the anxiety, whether it's about our bodies and our health, it's packed full of the things that we all fetch and worry about. But it's different to the bedtime Shema. Different to that moment of just before we're going to sleep, where we invoke the angels to kind of guide us, be with us, sit with us, give us that protection. And I think there's a distinct period of time that allows us to put to bed the anxieties and the issues that might fill our heads if we're going through our evening liturgy, before we get to the point where we actually put our head on the pillow and ask for a little bit of that, like, comforting protection. You know, for me, the evening Shema is a little bit like grabbing your teddy as a child, or the comforting arm around your shoulders of a parent helping to lull you off to sleep. How do we get that feeling as adults when you know, we've got more to worry about than we ever had as kids? But as kids, we have filled with people looking after us and lowering our anxiety levels. But actually, as adults, when we've got so much more to worry about, we really need to be able to do that for ourselves.
I can give you a strategy for that.
Oh, go for it.
Go for it, yeah.
So I love this one, and it's so effective. It's called the Put the Day to Bed Diary. And it is exactly that. At some point in the evening, we, not just before we go to bed, not just before the Shema, but actually earlier on, post-Maariv, let's call it, where we just spend 5 or 10 minutes, and not more than that. This is not something we agonize over, but we just sit down and we process our day a little bit. We process the anxieties, the worries, the to-do list that's just whirling around in our brain that we're often bringing into bed with us that is potentially going to be impacting on our ability to be able to sleep well. So what we put in this diary, I generally say, let's look at three different sections. First one is quick mind scan. What went well in your day? What positives can you take from your day? And it doesn't have to be huge stuff. It can be you had a nice chat with someone, you had something nice for lunch, however big or small. Next section would be what didn't go so well. What caused you frustration? What was irritating for you in your day? Maybe you had a piece of work that you thought you would get finished and you didn't. Whatever it is, just a very, very quick mind scan. This is not something that I want necessarily people to agonize over, but just really what comes to mind straight away. And the final section would be those whirling thoughts, the worries, however ridiculous they might seem, put it down on paper. And incidentally, when I'm saying on paper, I mean writing it down, old-fashioned writing it down. I don't mean typing it into the laptop or notes of your phone, but actually writing pen and paper. First of all, your brain processes things in such a different way when you write it down and you see it visually in front of you. So the worries, the to-do list, the stuff you've got hanging over you that you need to get done. So that it helps your brain to process it a little bit. It doesn't mean those things are dealt with, but it means that it almost tells your brain, it's in hand. I've written it down, and it helps to take it out of that whirling of the brain to give yourself a little bit of space for relaxation when you get into bed. But the important bit of this is the next morning. And I'm going to again mention about the, before we reach for the phone, before we do anything else, just spend a little bit of time reviewing that diary that you wrote the night before. So first of all, the perspective on the what didn't go so well the day before, it's like that sort of old fashioned, we'll sleep on it, it'll feel better in the morning. But it is the case that if you look over things that felt very big at the time, with the perspective after the night, they may look a little bit different and not feel as huge. But also what is really helpful is looking at that list, whether it's the worry list, the to-do list, and just mark off maybe three things that feels realistic for you to achieve that day. So it's whether it's a worry that you feel like, actually, there's something I could do about that. You know, that's hanging over me. I'm worried about it. There's something I can do about that today. So mark three things. Don't just highlight the whole lot of them, but pick three things that you feel like, you know what, I am actually going to be able to do those three things today. So it's just very empowering. It gives you that feeling of, okay, you know what? It doesn't feel so overwhelming because it's all just, I'm holding it in my mind and in my brain, but I've got it. I can see it in front of me and I'm going to commit to those three things. Hugely empowering.
Fabulous. Let's talk a little bit about the night. And can we be a little bit technical here, Marianne? Can you take us through the sleep and how it works, what happens?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a slightly daunting element to sleep because people don't really kind of understand and think, well, what actually happens when I go to sleep? It's just sort of something that kind of happens. Sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't. So I think it's really helpful. And especially if you struggle with sleep, is to understand a little bit of the workings of it. So what happens when we fall asleep? We start off in, we call it stage one of sleep. This is a very light stage. It's almost a transition stage where you feel your eyes are getting heavy. Your body starts feeling heavy as well, and you start sinking a little bit into what we call the sleep cycle. Just incidentally, you can be woken up quite easily from this stage of sleep because it's only a transition stage. If there's background noise from the house, from the street, you can be woken quite easily, but hopefully not, and you're able to sink into the next stage of the sleep cycle, this is stage two. And things start to slow down at this point. Systems are starting to slow down, the brain waves are starting to slow down, your body starts to feel even more heavier, you're less aware. And then you move through the cycle again into the first stage of deep sleep, stage three. And this is where a lot of stuff is happening. That we think that nothing happens during our sleep, but actually loads is happening during our sleep. And our body is making repairs that it needs to make. It's collecting memories and shifting them into long-term memory banks that we can be hopefully able to recall at some point. So this is the deep stage of sleep. And then the second stage of deep sleep, the sort of two stages of deep sleep, where again, we are in our very deepest point where our eyes are completely still. Our breathing is at a very sort of lowest level. Our body temperature drops to the lowest level it's going to be. And then we come back out into the final stage of the sleep cycle. We call this REM sleep. This stands for rapid eye movement. And this is where our eye movement increases, body temperature rises, heart rate increases, and we start to become a little bit more aware. This is where, in this final stage of the sleep cycle, is where our dreams occur. So often if we remember our dreams, it's because it's happening in that final stage when we're starting to become a little bit more aware. And so that is one complete sleep cycle, which generally takes around 90 minutes or so. But there's two things in particular that are interesting to note. When we transition between those sleep cycles, as we do throughout the night, we have what we call a partial awakening. So either you might be a little bit aware of it, where you might change position or pull a duvet over yourself. You're sort of in that semi-state of awareness, but not fully awake. Or you're not aware of it at all. Or you, for whatever reason, external reason that may be, you get pulled from that partial awake state into a fully awake state. And that's where you find yourself awake in the night. So these awakenings, we all have them during the night. It's not a situation where even the perfect sleeper say, oh, I never wake up during the night. That isn't the case. You actually do wake, you have these awakenings throughout the night. We've sort of evolved from that point. We needed to have those awakenings back in the day. We needed to keep alert. We needed to keep ourselves safe from predators. So we needed to have those awakenings, and we still have them. And it's just about how we manage those awakenings. And the other important thing that I also want to just mention is that those deep stages of sleep happen. We spend more time in the deep stages of sleep at the beginning part of the night. So from when we go to bed until, 2 o'clock in the morning, let's say. And then we've completed most of our deep sleep at the beginning part of the night. And then from middle of the night, as we approach early morning, we spend very little time in deep sleep and more time in the light stages of sleep. So if we have the situation where people say, well, I actually sleep relatively okay from when I get into bed, but then I find myself awake at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and I don't feel like I go back into a deep sleep after that, that is the case, because you have actually completed the majority of your deep sleep at that point that you're going to have for the whole night, and you are only going to maintain light sleep at the light stages of sleep for the later part of the night. So I think for a lot of people, that's actually encouraging to hear, is to say, actually, okay, that makes sense to me. Then it's okay. It's okay that I'm not feeling that I'm sleeping so well at the later part of the night.
Miriam?
I think there's something about what happens in those little awakenings that I absolutely love, because I think that for many people, it's the time where the anxiety floods in, the panic about whether you're asleep or awake, or, you know, how much more time you've got, and checking the clock and all of that kind of thing floods in. But for me, there's a piece that is, if we really did go to bed every night in the way that Moshe Makiri in the 16th century suggested we did, which was having done our deathbed confession and thinking every night, this might be our last. Actually, every one of those little awakenings when we became aware that we were actually alive and conscious would actually be a gift rather than a curse. And that if we were able to kind of smile to ourselves and say, still alive, aren't I grateful to be alive, and roll over and go back to sleep, would be so different from that panic of, oh no, I've woken up and now I'm never going to get back to sleep, which then perpetuates the kind of the anxiety. So I'm going to take the anxiety of the ancient rabbis who were so scared of death occurring in their sleep, and seeing it as a gift to us today, to be able to say, you know, every night just gives me the opportunity to wake up the next morning and say, I'm blessed to be able to live another day.
And I think you're going to give us, that's gorgeous, I love that. But you're going to give us one other tip. When Miriam said, when you wake up in the night and check the clock.
Oh, check the clock. So, yeah, this is not an ideal practice. The reason being, and especially if you find this is a regular situation and it is your routine, right? And often, surprisingly, you'll check the clock and it'll be 2:10. It can be very exact, because our body clock is very smart and falls into rhythms very easily. So you check the clock, and if you think about it, then your brain registers that time, and straight away on in there, even if it's not consciously aware, subconsciously it's, oh, this is the time where I'm going to now struggle to get back to sleep, right? So that is hugely impactful. Once your brain has that in its sights, that is going to almost set the scene for you. So checking the clock is really not ideal, especially if this is a regular situation.
What would you say? Get rid of the bedroom clock completely?
You don't need to know the time. Your body clock is just working, doing what it needs to do. You will set an alarm to make sure that you get up at the time that you need to get up, but turn the clock around and let go. Just let go of the time. It is the night hours. It's if you're not sleeping, and this is another thing I just want to add, is what we assume we need to do. If we're, let's say we have the awakenings and a few different situations are happening. Either you feel quite calm, you feel quite relaxed, you feel quite sleepy, in which case you just lie there and maybe do a very short breathing exercise or visualize a calming environment or whatever it is. If, however, you are awake and you're feeling you're quite awake. I mean, you're clearly a long way from sleep at this point. I would really suggest that you don't just lie in bed willing yourself, begging yourself almost to go to sleep, and adding on to checking the time and then doing probably that mental calculation that, let's face it, we all do, is if I go to sleep right now, I can have 6 hours and 15 minutes until I need to get up. And then the thoughts start coming of, but I'm not going to manage on that, but I'm not going to cope, I'm going to be exhausted. How am I going to manage my day? So that's where, as we said, moving the clock around, but really try and avoid lying in bed, willing yourself back to sleep. So instead, I would actually get up out of bed. It feels a little bit counterintuitive. I know people go, well, how am I going to get back to sleep if I'm just not in bed? But what you're doing here is looking at the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is taking your stress levels down around the fact that you're not sleeping. Because ultimately, the more stressed you get, the more you're unlikely to get back to sleep. Because think about it, you're lying in bed, you're fully stressed, and that is not conducive for relaxation to sleep. So take yourself to a space. And I often call this space a nest. And I think of it as a nest, a pre-prepared space. So rather than getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and blindly panicking of where am I going to go and what am I going to do, pre-prepare this space, a comfortable space to sit in, dim lighting, maybe something to listen to with headphones, a book to read, mindful colouring, lots of different things that you can think that will help you feel relaxed. And you go to this space until you feel sleepy. And you will start feeling sleepy, whether it's your eyes are getting heavy or you start yawning, but that will happen. And at that point is when you take yourself back into bed and hopefully be able to fall asleep more easily. So as I said, it's a bigger picture. It's to take the stress levels down around the not sleeping. And overall, over time, you are able to find that you're able to fall asleep more easily in bed.
Lovely. So you celebrate that you're awake and that you're alive. And you don't stress about it.
Absolutely. And start again the next morning with your good intentions of being grateful for another day and enjoying breakfast.
Lovely. Thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you're ready to change your habits and this podcast has inspired you, either go onto the Wellspring website, give us your email address, and we'll send you your very own Putting Your Day to Bed diary so that you can start by making that distinction about from one day to the next and making sure that you draw a line under the day before you're ready to pick it up again the next morning. And if you want even more tips about getting a good night's sleep, then don't forget to follow Marianne on her Instagram and check out her SleepWorks website.